Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Home sales up in February, and that's got people buzzing. But this year started with the worst sales numbers on record since 1963. So what to make of this moment? Home prices and mortgage rates down. Incentives up. Question marks all over the place, including this. Is renting the better deal or not? And what about those foreclosures? This hour, On Point, navigating the new real estate landscape. You can join the conversation. Are you looking to rent, to buy, to bid, to sell? What does the real estate dynamic look like now in your neck of the woods? We've got a great panel with us today. Joining me now from Philadelphia is Susan Wachter. She's professor of finance and real estate at the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School, co-director of the Penn Institute for Urban Research. Susan Wachter, welcome back. Great to have you.
Hi, Tom.
From Vienna, Virginia, June Fletcher joins us. She writes the House Talk column for the Wall Street Journal website. Her prescient book, House Poor, Pumped Up Prices, Rising Rates and Mortgages on Steroids, How to Survive the Coming Housing Crisis, came out in 2005. Good call there, June. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And joining us from Washington, D.C. is Elizabeth Razzie. She writes the local address real estate column for the Washington Post. She's author of The Fearless Home Buyer and The Fearless Home Seller, No Fear. Elizabeth Razzie, welcome to On Point.
Happy to be here.
June, let's come first to you on these latest sales numbers that have everybody putting them in the headlines this week. New home sales up in February. So which home sales exactly and where, June?
Well, you know, new home sales, it's from January, February, is actually, you know, when you look at them year to year, mm-hmm. they're down. But it's still, you know, for people who are looking for any glimmer of hope in the housing market, it's not so bad news. It does seem to be, at least to some people, signs that there may be some stabilization in the housing market, which everyone is looking for, since, of course, the housing market's decline is what led us into this economic debacle.
Of course, it's hard to figure out exactly what you're looking at in real estate because it's always regional. If I'm following this correctly, the story that talks about new home sales being up in February says up 4.7% nationwide, but 9.7% in the South from a month earlier, 6.6% up in the West, but 9% down in the Midwest, 3.3% down in the Northeast. That's hardly a consistent national picture there, Elizabeth.
What's happening is the very cheapest stuff is getting bought up, and a lot of that is in the West. California's just had a terrible, terrible time in this foreclosure epidemic. And the good news for the general market, though, is that some of this really cheap stuff is going away.
Now, the really cheap stuff, though, is still new homes, or is it foreclosed, Elizabeth?
Foreclosures are the bottom of the market, but they've been dragging down the hot prices of everything, including the new homes.
So, Susan, how do you read the big picture here? I mean, clearly we're still down in the trough. Do you feel some kind of bottom here? Is there more room for the real estate market, the home real estate market, to drop? Do you feel a turnaround, Susan, or too soon to say?
Well, this could be a bottom, but from my looking at this, this is no evidence that there's a bottom here. Certainly, it's better than if these numbers fell, but February is always a better year month than January. If you look at, as we just heard from June, the year-to-year numbers are absolutely dismal. And in fact, if you look carefully region by region at the year-to-year numbers, what I see is a spreading housing depression. The Northeast and the Midwest and the South, which were not nearly as badly hit as the West, are year to year considerably down.
So down, still the word there. June, how do you read consumers, potential buyers and sellers within this market behaving? It's a lot of news to respond to here and a lot of fear given what's happened over the last year and a half, 2 years.
There is a lot of fear, and I think, you know, many people have lost their jobs or are worried about losing their jobs, even if they have a job. As Elizabeth said correctly, it's foreclosures that are and short sales that are driving, you know, these drops in prices, but also driving sales. If you have cash, cash is king. It's a great time to pick up bargains, and investors usually look at homes that are priced 20% below the market. A lot of these sales are being driven by investors. You know, the vulture funds that were being built up even as the boom was peaking. You know, it's not always home buyers who are buying this these properties. It's often investors, and you know, that's certainly in the South, for example, and in the West too. Investors, bid these houses up during the boom, and now they're picking them up at bargain prices too. For the regular consumer, it means that, you know, if you're in an area where there's a ton of foreclosures, you know, prices are dropping, and may continue to drop. But if you're in a more stable area, that where there are very few foreclosures, that may not be the case.
Susan, so if there are bargains out there now, what kind of homes? And for who are, is it high end, mid range, the low end, as Elizabeth Razzi says? Are you seeing, is that where the quote unquote bargains are? We know every bargain is somebody's pain, but where do you see the bargain, Susan?
Well, I think you've just got it right. Every bargain, someone else is paying. It's a bargain depending on, if you're an investor particularly, if prices fall next month even more. So it's not a bargain for an investor. I think turning this around and looking at the overall conditions, the financial market conditions, I think there has been a bell has been tolled in terms of cost of mortgage financing, and that augurs well for a long-run recovery.
Mortgage financing, because the rates are so low now.
Historically low.
Elizabeth Razzi, what do you see the immediate impact of that being? Of course, the Fed has stepped in there in a very big way. We're looking at mortgage rates now, 30-year fixed of 4.987, even lower. How's that affecting the market, Elizabeth?
I mean, interest rates are being driven artificially low by the government, and that is not being unnoticed by first-time buyers. There's a really unusual combination of events that are attracting first-time buyers into the market. It's the availability of low prices on foreclosures and the homes that have to compete with the foreclosures, the availability of the new $8,000 tax credit, which is a limited-time offer. You've got to close on the home by December 1st to qualify, and the artificially low interest rates. And so a lot of first-time buyers are thinking, are conditions going to be any better for me next year? And even if prices do continue to drop some, the chance to lock in these low interest rates and to take advantage of the tax credit and the prospect that you will then have a place to stay for the next 5 years or more, people are really starting to readjust their expectations back to where they should be, and to think of a home purchase as a place that is a long-term investment. It's a prospect you're going to stay there. It should be at least 5 years.
So, June Fletcher, how's it look to you for first-time buyers? If you've got, I don't know, you know, nieces, nephews, cousins who are 30-something, potential first-time buyers, looking at that $8,000 tax credit, that's sort of more or less right off the top for the balance of this year, and those low mortgage rates, what would you be saying to them now? Get in, get out, stay on the sidelines?
I agree completely with Elizabeth about, you know, in terms of being a limited time offer. The problem is, I mean, it may not even be first time buyers in their 30s. We might be talking about first time buyers in their 20s. Everything has to do with, you know, job security. People aren't going to buy homes if they don't feel secure in their jobs. As many of the baby boomers, and I'm a baby boomer, you know, are being laid off, the people who are getting these jobs are the youngest people. So many of the people with the greatest job security right now, although they're being terribly overworked, are the youngest people and the least experienced people. I'm talking about people in their 20s going into the market for the first time. The problem is for people in their 20s is they also are just beginning their careers and they're mobile. So that can be an argument for renting. I mean, certainly, as Elizabeth says, if you're not going to stay in your home for 2, 3, 5 years, it doesn't make sense to buy anything. And people who are first-time buyers, just beginning their households, beginning their careers, may not be ready to settle down.
Susan Wachter, do you see home prices with all of this tumbling then that's gone on, having come back into a to the right, into a healthy relationship with American incomes, or with incomes kind of in motion and often downward motion? Is that still a question too?
Yeah, well, this is right. This is a moving picture, unfortunately. I think the good news is we've seen the deacceleration down of a number of these indicators, but unemployment is still increasing. And while we may have prices that are within range of fundamentals, with a economy with a normal unemployment rate, this unemployment rate is dynamic, and it's not going in the right direction. Of course, we do have the stimulus package out there. It hasn't hit. It won't hit for a few months, but that will be a major factor. And home purchases are lagging. So I absolutely agree with job insecurity is now driving the housing market.
But, Elizabeth, you're talking about investors coming back in, the wise guys sort of seeing this as the moment?
Well, there are some investors, but I agree completely with Susan. I mean, jobs are it. If you're a person who's worried about their job is not going to be getting into the home market, and they should not be. But investors are not always, you know, big hedge funds and the New York's fat cats. These can be mom and pops who are not seeing their other investments do very well these days either. And so you do have, if the price is low enough, it really reduces the risk of the investment. And if you're going to be in it longer, I think 2 years is not long enough. 5 years at least, I think, should be your time frame for buying a home, whether it's for investment or to live in.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about home sales ticking up and what's up with real estate now, whether it's time to get in, get out, buy, bid, rent, and where, and whether home ownership is still, should be, the American dream. We're joined by Susan Wachter from the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School. June Fletcher is here. She's a real estate columnist for the Wall Street Journal website, author of House Poor. Elizabeth Razzie is here from Washington, writes the local address real estate column for the Washington Post, author of The Fearless Home Buyer, The Fearless Home Seller. Elizabeth, help us look at the buy versus rent question. There's been a lot of talk again about rental. I mean, just as a practical matter, I'm looking at numbers here saying, this is out of an outfit in Irvine, California, saying that out of 76 metropolitan area markets across the country, 50% show that a person can now buy a house for less than renting when considering the after-tax cost of home ownership. And yet rental's getting a lot of attention these days, Elizabeth, as people kind of gone sour on home as the ideal investment. You know, there's length of time you stay, but what about the rest of the calculation?
Well, I think the most important thing should be lifestyle. As June alluded to earlier, a lot of the younger people who would be first-time buyers also are very mobile in this society. And if you really are settling down when you buy a home. Rent is just much more appropriate for someone who isn't sure whether they'll be going to grad school in a year or two or marrying or divorcing or whatever life changes their housing needs. So rent remain. That should be the very first thing that people consider is their own lifestyle. As far as being the American dream, I think people have rightly kind of taken a harder look at that. That home ownership is not the American dream. That was a marketing ploy of the real estate industry. That said, though, if you look at most people who, over the long term, do accumulate some wealth, one of the first things they bought was a home. One of the things that usually, in normal times, accumulates the most value is their home. But we have to look at it over decades, a decade, two decades.
June Fletcher, I'm looking at numbers here from Reuters. This is in San Bernardino County, east of Los Angeles. Average monthly rent for an apartment, $1,157. Average after-tax monthly mortgage payment on a median-priced single-family detached home is now $971, projected to go down to $872 by mid-year. Now, on paper, that would make it look like buying might be the thing to do, June.
That's true, except for the fact that your base mortgage cost is only the beginning of what you have to pay for home ownership, you should, and investors typically do this, add 40 to 45% to the base mortgage cost to take into account other things that you pay for. For example, you're going to pay homeowners insurance, you're going to pay property taxes, you have a lot of maintenance costs. You know, the refrigerator breaks down, the landlord isn't going to pay for it, you are.
Yeah.
And so all of these things need to be taken into account when you think about buying versus renting. You know, that being said, as Elizabeth pointed out, I wouldn't agree that homeownership is not the American dream. I think for many people, psychologically it is. You know, it shows that you have a certain status in society, that you've got stability. I think people are more upset about losing their homes than they are about losing any other big ticket item in their lives. Mm. So I do think that it matters, you know, beyond just the dollars and cents of things. But I think what's happening now is people are realizing their homes are not the ATM machines that they thought they were before, that you don't always accumulate equity. And really the way to win in the housing market is to stay, under any circumstances, to stay. The longer you stay, the better you do, because real estate cycles do go up and they do go down. And, you know, eventually real estate will start accumulating equity. You need to really look at your own micro market, as well as these big numbers, because it can be, you know, I'm in the Washington, D.C. area,
yeah.
and even my neighborhood, for example, which has no foreclosures, the prices are much more stable and even appreciating. You go 18 miles west where, ironically, the houses are actually newer,
mm-hmm.
but were sold in 2005, 2006 at the top of the market with...
That you were warning about.
Yes, with option arms and interest-only loans, many more foreclosures in that market. So the prices of those homes, you know, we're talking about neighborhoods of houses that are newer and nicer than my house,
yeah.
Which is 20 years old,
mm-hmm.
Are actually depreciating at a much more rapid rate. So you really need to look at things like that. You know, when was the house built? You know, the people who bought them, did they buy them? Are they now underwater on their mortgages, or are these, you know, more stable neighborhoods? And so, you know, again, you need to, for the average consumer, you really need to look around you at job stability. You know, what's the job market like in Washington, D.C., for example? Unemployment is really low because of the federal government's initiatives. That's certainly not true in some place like Michigan, where the auto industry, for example, is in such trouble.
No kidding. Susan Wachter, here's another buy-rent comparison, again from Reuters. Now, they're quoting a realtor here, but nevertheless, it says a person can buy a rent, that is, a one-bedroom apartment in a doorman building in Manhattan for about $2,700 a month. You could buy the place for about $600,000, and the calculation here is that if you've got a good credit score, you can borrow 80%, lock in that low 30-year fixed-rate mortgage. The payment on buying it is only $2,600 a month. So there you are, one-bedroom, doorman building, Manhattan, and you're buying it for $100 less a month than renting it. Does that look like a good idea to you, Susan?
Well, of course, you have to look at the small print on anything, and there are usually monthly costs associated with buying as well as you need to have those deep pockets for emergencies, et cetera. And the bigger question, and this has been alluded to, is your own personal situation. Are you in danger of losing your job? Obviously, that's not a time to be expanding, and I think people are quite aware of that and considering that in their decisions. And also, more broadly, is the market itself still vulnerable mm-hmm. to job losses? I think that's why people are on the sidelines. I don't think we have a clear bottom. And if housing prices fall another 10%, which is quite possible, then you've just wiped out a month of rent.
It's funny, here we're talking housing, but it all comes back to jobs, which really means the economy. Let's bring our listeners in here from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Crystal. Hi, Crystal. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Pretty good. What's your question, Crystal?
My question is, I was listening to a tax seminar recently about the 2009 tax credit for the housing purchase for first-time homeowners.
This is the $8,000 tax credit? Sounds like quite a lot.
Yeah, it does. Now, the way it was presented in this seminar was that you get the credit this year, and then every year thereafter for a certain number of years, 8 to 10 years, you have to pay back a portion of that on your tax return. You have to add it back in. And if you sell your home before that time period is up, then you have to go ahead and pay the rest of it back. So it came across as more of an interest-free loan than an actual credit.
Let's see if we can get the details on that. June or Elizabeth? June, do you know?
That's right now, the details of these tax credits are being changed in Congress, even as we speak, and there's still some lobbying to make what the real estate industry wants is a $15,000 tax credit for everybody, not just first-time buyers. So I'm not certain of this, but I don't think it's been nailed down completely yet.
So still in flux, Elizabeth?
Yeah. I think that the seminar she went to was confusing last year's tax credit with this year's tax credit.
Okay.
For purchases last year, you could only get the $7,500 tax credit,
mm-hmm.
But that actually was really an interest-free loan in which you had to pay it back over about 15 years and faster if you sold within the first couple of years.
And now the $8,000?
This year's tax credit mm-hmm. is much more palatable to buyers. It's a real tax credit. I believe there's some recapture provisions if you sell in the short term, and that's to keep people from trying to flip and take advantage of it. But if you stay in there a reasonable length of time, 2 or 3 years or longer, you do not have to pay back that tax credit.
And who's a first-time buyer? Does it really mean you've never owned a home or you've rented recently or what?
Excellent point. It means that you have not owned a home in the past 3 years.
Okay.
That's just sort of the general federal definition of first-time buyer.
Let's get a call from Ryan in Boston. Hi, Ryan. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What do you know?
I guess I'm just curious to know what your guests think about, whether or not it's actually socially responsible for the government to be encouraging young people to buy, considering, how much debt we're accumulating, and then additionally, the risks involved with purchasing a home after college and, et cetera.
How old are you, Ryan?
I'm 26.
Have you been thinking about buying?
I was thinking about buying when I first get out of school, and, there's that kind of pressure, why are you going to rent? You're wasting your money. But then I recently got laid off, and then that kind of, killed that dream for the moment.
And maybe made you glad you hadn't bought. Susan Wachter, what about this? Is national policy? I mean, on the one hand, it can look like, maybe a godsend for a young person who wants to buy a home. On the other hand, Ryan's got a little sense of being lured back into something that may be good for the real estate industry, but maybe not good for him.
Well, I actually do think federal policy at this point is responsible. The key point here is that the historic declines in mortgage rates, which makes housing that's what's really the driving factor in affordability,
mm-hmm.
that's for a fixed-rate, long-term mortgage, which means that the owner is not exposed to these automatic mortgage payment shocks that came with teaser rates and option arms. The fixed-rate mortgage is a responsible instrument, and to encourage people to buy in if they can otherwise afford it is actually, I think, and if they're going to be there for the long term, not irresponsible.
Let's get a call from Madison, Wisconsin. Kyle, you're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, I'm possible first-time home buyer.
Okay.
My wife and I are considering our options, and the more we look at it, the flexibility of renting. I mean, we're going to be here for another 5, 6, 7 years, but the flexibility of renting, and if I lose my job and I can get another one and pay my rent, even if I'm paid less. But right now, as it stands, I can save a third of my income and not be in debt to somebody else. I'm not necessarily seeing the advantage.
And what about the market there in Madison, Wisconsin, Kyle? Have home prices come down a lot? Does it look attractive or to you?
No, they've come down, certainly. But, even in Madison, I mean, for a three-bedroom house, you're talking between $200,000 and $300,000, for anything in a decent location. That's a pretty hefty
still a chunk of change.
And
what about the old American dream view of home owning? Do you think that's going to hold for you, for your generation, Kyle?
Well, it's certainly something that I'm interested in, but at the same time, if I'm saving a third of my income, just just putting it away, and you know, I can diversify that in whatever investments I want, versus putting all of my eggs in one basket. I don't think it doesn't sound as smart. I might make a better return possibly by buying a home, but it's a bigger gamble to me, I think.
Interesting. There's a new wariness of a new generation there. Kyle, thank you very much for your call. I heard someone there.
Yes, Kyle. Kyle's point, I think, is very well taken, and it's a perfect example of the need for flexibility. You know, if he lost a job in Madison, Wisconsin, he would need to presumably look farther for another job, and owning is just the wrong position to be in to take that, to look further. And that's why the insecurity in the job market is critical for this rent-owned decision.
Let's go to Janine in Waltham, Massachusetts. Janine, you're on the air.
Hello. I'm calling to just say that the government, to some extent, is responsible for a bit of this morass that we're in right now with respect to the housing crisis, in the sense that they actually subsidize through their tax law and the tax deductibility of both interest payments as well as the property tax payments is subsidized in the tax law, so that there was an encouragement for people to have home ownership as the ultimate goal.
Been an incentive there for a long time in those tax incentives. Do you think that's wrong, Janine? Are you saying extend it to renters as well? Is it an equity issue?
Exactly. It's all parties are paying for living expenses, not just people who happen to own homes, but those individuals who are renting as well. They're paying similar. I think some of your statistics that you gave show that there's some similarity. In fact, renters, it's more than it is for homeowners, but yet they don't have that tax deductibility of their living expenses as homeowners do.
Janine, let us pick that up. June, what about? Is it time for a national tax break for renters to match the favor that the government has shown homeowners for a long time?
Well, no, this is, I'm glad you asked me to answer this, because this is something that, you know, is certainly something that my friends and I have talked about for a long time. The reason, really, the government didn't always subsidize home ownership. And in fact, if you look back, you know, the early days, you know, before the Depression, you know, only a third of the nation were homeowners. And, you know, now it's completely reversed. Now you've got, you know, about two-thirds of the nation being homeowners. You know, why should the government encourage home ownership? Well, it does create more stable communities. It creates communities where people, you know, certainly people who own a house, at least this is the theory behind it, people who own a house are less likely to move. They're more likely to improve property values. You know, they're going to care more about their neighborhood, be less crime. So, you know, the government has, you know, there is a chance for people to accumulate wealth in normal times.
Of course, as I listen to you say that, June, the image in my mind are these, you know, mile after mile of foreclosure neighborhoods, which have just become wastelands, the furthest thing from, you know, that happy picket fence community that brings to mind.
Well, that's true. And I mean, when you talk about places like, you know, the Rust Belt, where you've had, you know, industries close, and you've got, you know, entire industries, you know, that are evaporating and deteriorating, you know, you've got a larger governmental problem than you know, rent versus own. You really have to do something to try to encourage, you know, this is beyond this current discussion about encouraging job development, because as we've all agreed, this is really the crux of the issue. I mean, people have jobs, don't have jobs, they can't afford to rent, much less buy, and then you see entire swaths of the country, you know, being abandoned, both by renters and by homeowners, because, you know, if you're renting your house and you've got a job in Detroit, you're also going to abandon your house. You do need to have jobs. So there is something of a, you know, a rationale for having, from the government standpoint, for supporting homeownership to create more stable communities. You know, that being said, it is really rather unfair to renters that they don't get to deduct a proportion of their living expenses.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about home sales ticking up this hour and what's up with real estate now, whether it's time to get in, get out, buy, bid, rent, and whether home ownership is still, should be, the American Dream. Susan Wachter is with us from the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School. June Fletcher, real estate columnist for the Wall Street Journal, author of House Poor, is here. And Elizabeth Razzi writes the local address column for the Washington Post, real estate column there, author of The Fearless Home Buyer and The Fearless Home Seller. Let's get a call from Pawtucket, Rhode Island, and Dale. Dale, you're on the air.
I am here. Hi, Tom.
Hi. What do you know?
I am one of those small-time investors that we discussed at the top of the show.
Okay. What are you investing in?
I'm sorry?
What are you investing in, Dale?
Multifamily property. I own a couple of other multifamily houses in Massachusetts, and I just closed on another one on Friday. This is a house that I tried to buy 5 years ago, and I closed on it for half the price that it sold for 5 years ago.
Now, what kind of a house is it?
Well, it is was originally built as a duplex. Now it has four apartments in it. It's a 100-year-old building, and it needs a ton of work. But that's what I do. I do carpentry and remodeling, and that's what I do for a living. And we don't talk much about the self-employed people and their unemployment situation, but we get unemployed also.
Right.
And this is an opportunity for me to have work for a year, working on this piece of property that needs a ton of work. I think it's a good investment because I think the rental market is strong. You know, we talk about all renters now, and the rental market, in my mind, is very strong for a variety of reasons. And so, you know, given the price of the property and the fact that I know, you know, the business of remodeling and being a landlord, I think it's a great investment right now.
So it feels good to you? The price down half from what it was a few years ago. Why is that? Is it in foreclosure? Was it?
It was in foreclosure. That's correct. You know, the people that owned it before me were one of the classic subprime mortgages. They took out more money than in a mortgage than they paid for the house. They were going to fix it up. They spent the money somewhere else, never fixed it up, and finally got foreclosed upon.
Four family. Can you tell us what you paid for it?
Well, it sold 5 years ago for $284, and I paid $145.
Okay, and you're in there going to fix it up, and what's your plan, to rent or to sell it a year from now?
Well, I own a couple of other buildings, and I'm hanging on to them. I don't think this is a good time to be buying and selling, so we're going to buy them and hang on to them. And my only risk, as far as I'm concerned, is if something goes wrong in the rental market. But if I can rent it, you know, I'll be okay.
Dale, good luck to you. June Fletcher, what do you make of Dale's calculation there?
Well, I think, you know, certainly it was inevitable. I mean, part of the reason that you can get houses now at tremendous steals is that they were artificially too high, you know, back in 2004, 5, and 6. And so to a large extent, you know, as painful as this is for many people who bought at the height of the market, houses in so many markets in the country were well beyond the ability of, you know, the average person to pay for them. They were very unaffordable. And now, even though these price drops are alarming, when you think back, you know, at some of these markets that were appreciating over 30% a year in Southern California, Southern Florida, many of the markets that investors are now going into, you know, this is really a wrenching but necessary adjustment.
Susan Wachter, who is selling now and who's not? Is it all distress selling out there? I mean, if you didn't have to sell, I guess why would you sell now? Is it all sales of necessity, or what about the sell side?
Well, in some markets, it is sales of necessity that are more than 50% of the sales, and especially on the West Coast and East Coast Florida. These are distressed markets that are, you could characterize them really being in a depression. But after all, we're very regional. We're a large country. It's very regionally based.
Mm-hmm.
Parts of the country go on as before. Housing prices haven't fallen that far. And this is a very granular calculation, just as we heard a few moments ago from
Pawtucket,
I believe,
mm-hmm.
that you can look at 2-3 miles away, and the housing market conditions do switch. I want to come back to Dale's comments. What he's doing is absolutely the right thing at this moment, because the rental market is unlikely to find itself in difficulty going forward with the huge amount of stimulus. The recession is perhaps going to get worse for a bit, but we are not going into a economic depression, the policies are there to bring us out of where we are.
Well, why is that different? I mean, if people lose jobs, they have as much trouble paying rent as they do paying a mortgage.
Absolutely.
So what's the difference?
Absolutely. And,
but you were warning on the mortgage vis-a-vis the
exactly,
job market.
Exactly. But I do think that we will come out of this. I think that we may have worsening unemployment. Mm-hmm. We're likely to have worsening unemployment for the next 6 months, perhaps even for a year. But it will come back, so planning carefully, and that's the key point, financially carefully, so that you're not in that problematic situation, which the buyers that drove those prices up were. Not only were the prices too high that they purchased at, but really what the driver was that the mortgages were too risky. They were buying in with mortgages that were coming due, these teaser rates, option arms, mm-hmm. negatively amortizing, and when they came due at these higher rates, when the mortgage payments went twice as high, either through option arms or through teaser rates, they simply they couldn't pay, and they didn't even necessarily expect that they could pay. They expected they could sell at higher prices. So these homes that had these mortgages, which are now in distress, are there for 50% on the dollar. And what's extremely important is actually tenants are being put out of these homes through no fault of their own.
When the foreclosure man comes.
Mm-hmm. And they're being foreclosed because of these mortgages, which were unsustainable, too risky, and payments that were going to be shocked upwards. So that's an opportunity. It's an opportunity. It's a win-win for the current tenants. It's an opportunity for investors.
So it's a regional issue. It's a granular issue. Elizabeth Rezzi, what about this number, 9.7% up in the sales in the South last year, last month? How do you read that? Do we have boomers, you know, looking for deals now, even, you know, in the down market there, or what's going on?
That's where the supply is. I mean, the very most distressed properties have been in places like Florida and Southern California, and the prices have fallen just so dramatically that you have investors and first-time buyers and other people being coaxed into the market. But I'm really heartened by the example of Dale, for example, mm-hmm. and that's, you know, I'm not trying to declare a turn to the market, but the seeds of recovery come from decisions like his to take his own life into his control, mm-hmm. create his own employment. His spending on that property is going to help the local building supply people and the other trades he has to hire. And he's learning – he's going to be providing a service to the community, providing 4 rental units.
Fix it up, rent it out,
nice
improve the economy. Yep.
It's a service. And it's all in his control. He was able to buy this at a price that he thought was attractive. It's not like one of the advantages for real estate investment versus stocks, and I've got nothing mm-hmm. against stocks. Mm-hmm. We all need some of them if we ever want to retire. But it's in his control. The value of the stock market goes up and down by 200 points a day or more. You don't control that. He has a lot of control over this investment and this job that he's creating for himself. And the more people who make those kinds of decisions – that's the beginnings of the turnaround, the very, very tiny seeds of the turnaround, and that's how they come.
June, may I ask about foreclosure? Now, Dale is in the business of buying and fixing up, so he knows how it works, and he has the capacity to fix it up. But purchases out of foreclosure, do those work for ordinary home buyers who may not be skilled with a hammer and saw or have the business and time to do it? Do you have to be more or less a contractor to really, you know, swing in that jungle or not, June?
Absolutely not. And many of the foreclosures, for example, in the Washington, D.C. area, I happen to be house hunting, and I've looked at a number of foreclosures and short sales. They're in really good condition. They're really the only reason they're in foreclosure or that they're short sales is because the owners bought them at the top of the market and with these exotic mortgages,
right.
And you know they simply can't afford them anywhere. There's nothing wrong with the houses. Having said that, if you can buy a house and increase its value as Dale is doing, and I salute him for doing that, for the same reasons that Elizabeth mentioned, you know, then you can even add more value to the house, and you know when you finally do sell it, make money.
June, what's a short sale? Is that just someone who's in trouble and needs to sell, not in foreclosure, or?
Well, a short sale is when you owe more money. You bought the house.
You're underwater.
You're underwater.
Okay.
You bought the house for more than, mm-hmm. and it's now you owe more on it than it's now worth in the market. So what you try to do is you try to get the lender to agree to accept less than you owe him, so that because you no longer can afford to pay the mortgage. So, you know, these are also
and
opportunities,
off it goes.
Not just houses that are owned by the bank. One of the things I also wanted to bring up was the fact that, you know, many people have told me that there are a lot of foreclosure properties that have not been unleashed on the market. The banks are holding on to them, hoping that the market will improve. So these could potentially destabilize markets, and I think some people are worried about investing.
That the market will tick up and then the banks unleash another wave of foreclosure homes.
Exactly, and that this will drag down prices even further. You know, but I would say, you know, the cash is king. For the average consumer, you know, if you have the cash, you can get the financing. A foreclosure home can be a tremendous bargain because, you know, they are so cheap relative to market rate homes, and so you have what, you know, what the industry calls instant equity.
Yeah.
In the homes when the market finally does recover.
And off you go. Let's go to Tupper Lake, New York, and John, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I have a comment that reflects back to your earlier comment about being mobile.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a homeowner here. I'm not underwater, but the market being soft, I'm unable to sell, and I need to basically get out of Tupper Lake to find better opportunities for employment. So I kind of feel hamstrung a bit by being a homeowner.
You feel stuck? You can't move for a better job because what? You're afraid the market won't pick up your home if you put it on the market?
I really don't think it would sell. And if it did, you know, I'm not convinced I would get you know, what I feel it's worth or what it could get in a more favorable market.
Right. That's interesting. I mean, a lot of people have pointed to that as a problem currently because people just aren't as mobile as they might be to look for jobs elsewhere. Not just you, John, but right across the country, a lot of people in that situation. Let me get another call here from Cedar Rapids, Iowa, and Julie. Julie, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
In Cedar Rapids, in the Midwest in general, which generally gets ignored by national media, we have not had the ballooning of home values as they have had elsewhere.
Right.
And so, yes, we have foreclosures here. A number of the foreclosures right now are based on the flooding that we had last June,
mm-hmm.
and the people who didn't even live in a floodplain or lived in a 500-year floodplain who got totally wiped out, had no flood insurance, yeah. and had not enough money to fix it up or couldn't get the money to fix it up, or are getting more money than the property's worth now to fix it up.
So it's a good time to sell in your neck of the woods.
It's a great time to buy or sell here.
We have
only seen our property values, as far as sales go, decrease by 2 or 3%, not nearly what it is nationally.
And there's the word from the Midwest. And, Julie, thank you for sharing it there from Cedar Rapids. Let's get another view from Iowa. We won't ignore that Midwest. Des Moines, Dave, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom.
Hi.
I'm in kind of another category. I'm, like, cruising the streets in Des Moines right now looking for homes.
Okay.
And what I'm finding is that I'm very frustrated. I want to buy a smaller footprint house, something a little bit greener. What I'm finding is I'm not the handiest guy in the world. I'm
okay.
the other end of the spectrum with a kid and a wife and got to
yep.
get a home. And I am finding nothing really in a sensible price range. And everything seems to be so old and decrepit. It almost seems like we need another urban renewal project. And, you know, if I say, well, gosh, I'd like to, you know, get a $10,000 geothermal drill done in my home.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, I'm talking to people that are saying, well, that's going to add $50,000 to the price of the house. And there just kind of seems to be a disconnect really here on housing. And, you know, there's those 4,000-foot McMansions that are falling dramatically. But I don't want to heat one of those with a propane tank, you know.
Right, no
down.
Kidding. So you don't want a McMansion, but that smaller footprint, greener house is hard for you to find. Our time is short, but let us pick it up. June, what do you say to Dave? Is that a common thing? I mean, we've got scads, you know, mile after mile of McMansions out there. Are they out of favor, out of flavor now? And
well, that's very, very interesting. You should say that. You know, fortunately, we have a president who believes in green and sustainable housing, and I think, you know, there are a number of tax credits that are being extended for, you know, doing energy efficient kinds of remodels. Mm. But having said that, it's certainly something I've seen myself. It does seem that because you know, a lot of the McMansions were built during the top of the boom. That is often the ones that are the most dramatic falls in prices. So, you know, perversely, you're finding some of the newer, better houses are some of the best buys.
But then you have to heat them, if that's what you mean.
And you do have to heat them. So, I mean, it's a very strange, I would say, just keep on looking. For our other caller who had a problem about
mobility,
not wanting to move, mm-hmm. Wanting to move and not being able to sell his house or not wanting to sell his house in the bottom of the market, I wanted to suggest possibly a lease option. If you can afford to live someplace else, you can rent your house out to somebody else with the option to buy it, set a price, and put aside part of their usually around 10% of the rent towards the down payment of a house. It's often a win-win situation for both seller and buyer.
Maybe a way to move. June, did I hear you say that you were out cruising the real estate market in the Washington area? Was that for work or personally? Are you looking to
personally,
buy now?
Yes.
You're looking to buy now, June? You're looking for a bargain? How's it look?
There are a lot of bargains, but again, you need cash, and I have, for example, a lot of equity in my house, because I've lived there for 13 years, mm-hmm. but I can't, many banks now are no longer extending home equity lines of credit, even to people with very good credit, as my husband and I both have. So we can't take the home equity out of our house to buy a new house. We're going to have to sell it first to buy a foreclosure. Problem with buying foreclosures or short sales is they often take a lot of time to accomplish. So, probably have to find some place interim to live.
So the mechanics of getting it done become really something to address here.
Yes.
Wow. Well, June, good luck to you in that long arc of selling and buying, if that's what's happening. June Fletcher with the Wall Street Journal. June, thanks very much for being with us this hour. Just great to have you.
Thank you.
And Elizabeth Razzi at the Washington Post writes the local address, real estate column there, author of The Fearless Home Buyer and The Fearless Home Seller. I guess you've got to be these days. But Elizabeth, thank you so much for being with us this hour.
Oh, I'm happy to be here.
Susan Wachter at the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School. It's always good to talk with you, Susan. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Listeners, good luck with your real estate. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.